Nice to see you all. Hope you're doing well. Oh, can I use either of these clickers? Oh, exciting. Right, let's see. There we go. I don't know how you're feeling, but we've hit the 20s. Isn't that amazing? I feel like, you know, we should be swinging beads and doing... Oh, no, but I think that's the wrong 20s. Anyway, I wonder how you're feeling about the new year and the new decade. I saw a meme that said, day one, January the 1st, yay, new year, new decade. Day two, devastating fires all over Australia, hundreds of people dying in floods in Indonesia. Day three, have we started World War III? And it kind of went on from there. So we're not very far into the new decade, but already things are not necessarily going the way that we'd want them to. I wonder what your hopes are for this new year. Why don't you turn to someone you don't know? Yes, I am asking you. I don't care what your cultural background is. Don't care if you feel comfortable. Turn to someone you don't know and quickly talk with them about what's one thing you're hoping for 2020. I tell you what, why don't you stay where you are if you've moved seats, because we're going to be doing another little bit of pair work later on. So, you know, now you've got a new buddy, you can ask them the next question I have for you. So many of you are going to be going back to work for the first time tomorrow. Some of you are like, haha, I've been at work for a long time since then. But the common question everyone asks is, well, how was your Christmas? And the consensus in my family, when I went back to see my parents and my sister, was that Christmas telly was a bit rubbish this year. That just felt that, you know, things could have been better in that department. But there was one film that I watched over Christmas I really enjoyed. And if you've not seen it, you can see it on BBC iPlayer. It's Florence Foster Jenkins. It's the true story, although I think they've done their own version of that, a hilarious woman played by Meryl Streep. If you've not seen it, it really is worth a watch. It's based on a wealthy, real-life New York society hostess who was a great patron of music. She was very generous. She would give out a lot of generosity to people. And as a result, she was surrounded by people who would always clap and applaud her, however dreadful her singing might be. She was married to a man called St. Clair Bayfield, played there by Hugh Grant. His role was almost more of that of kind of a father and a fixer for her. He made sure that she was cocooned in a world of happiness, a world where everyone thought that she was talented, or at least that's what they expressed. But it was also fake. The Hugh Grant character, he has his own girlfriend. That's really the love of his life, and he kind of bears with Florence. And behind her back, people are tittering, they're laughing, they're mocking her. And you can actually listen. I thought about playing one of her actual recordings for you, but then I thought I'd be kind. It's too early in the new year. It is quite extraordinary, some of the notes that she doesn't get. Sometimes I think it can feel easier to be a Florence. Sometimes I think we would much rather live in a world that feels safe and that feels happy, even if we know it's fake, than to live in reality, to live with truth. Another film you might be familiar with that's, I think, just celebrated its 25-year anniversary is The Matrix. Yes, it does make me feel old. I remember when that came out. And there's a figure in that who's the sort of the Judas character. He betrays all of the resistance because he wants to get back into The Matrix. He knows The Matrix isn't real, but in The Matrix, he can at least eat meat that tastes like meat. So having sold out his friends, he says to Mr. Smith and his agents, put me back in The Matrix. You know, make me a rock star or something. He'd rather live a lie that feels comfortable than live with the uncomfortable truth. And all of that sets the scene for our new sermon series that we're starting. Most of us are familiar with the Sermon on the Mount, which you'll find in the Gospel of Matthew. So that's Matthew's account of Jesus's life. And you might be familiar with the Beatitudes. There's lots of, you know, blessed are you, blessed, 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 blessed. we're less familiar with Luke's account, which is Jesus on the plane. So our sermon series starting today is Jesus on the level. What is Jesus preaching about as he's on this plane talking to his disciples? And we're going to have Gio come and read it for us now. There you go.
Hello? Yes. It's on page 976 of the Church Bible. And we're going to read from verse 17 to 26 of Luke chapter 6. He went down with them and stood on a level place. A large crowd of his disciples was there, a great number of people from all Judea, Jerusalem, and from coastal region around Tyre and Sidon, who had come to hear him to be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by evil spirits were cured, and the people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. Looking at his disciples, he said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how their ancestors treated the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when everyone speaks well of you, for that is how their ancestors treated the false prophets."
So let's just recap. We're starting near the beginning of Jesus's ministry. And what's happened is he's actually been up a mountain, but he hasn't been preaching there in this version that Luke gives us. In fact, what he's done is he's taken his closest followers with him. They've gone up the mountain, and then out of them, he's picked 12 who are going to now be his new inner circle, which I imagine was a little bit uncomfortable, you know, for those that didn't make the grade. So you've then got the also-ran coming back down the mountain all together. And then Jesus starts this amazing sort of ministry of casting out unclean spirits from people, healing them. Lots of people are there to listen to him, probably thinking, "I wish you were doing this on a mountain so we could see you a bit better." But anyway, And it's Jesus turning to his disciples as he then says what he says about the blessed and the woes. So these two things. The people who are listening, as well as the disciples, they're from the more Jewish areas, but they're also from the larger Greco-Roman areas, particularly of Phoenicia, modern-day Lebanon. So Tyre and Sidon are two of the places. So he's speaking to a mixed crowd, He gives them this step parallelism. So there are four blessings, and they're mirrored by four opposite woes with a bridge in the middle. So we've got blessed are the poor, and then woe to the rich, the opposite. Blessed are the hungry, woe to the full. Blessed are those who weep, woe to those who laugh. Blessed are those who are persecuted, woe to those who are popular. I wonder when you talked with your neighbour about your hopes for this year, I wonder how many of you were like, "You know, I want to weep more. I want to be poorer. I really don't feel I'm getting persecuted enough. And I just feel I need a bit more derision in my life, a bit more mockery." You know, if we were doing a tick box, which category of people would we have ended up in? Would we be one of the people who's blessed? would we be one of the people who gets the woes? How does that make you feel? Turn to your neighbour again. You've got about a minute. Have a quick chat. In many ways, this list, it feels a bit more like a socialist or even a communist manifesto. It's the kind of thing you might expect Jeremy Corbyn to say, you know, it's time for the poor, it's time for the hungry, it's time for the mourning, you know, those who are weeping, it's time for those who are persecuted. There's something revolutionary about it. There's something very uncomfortable about it for a largely middle-class church. When people ask me to describe St. Bees, you know, what sort of flavour of St. Bees? I explain, well, you know, theoretically, we're Anglican, but to be honest, we've got a bit more of a Pentecostal vibe going on. So, you know, I don't know if any of you have been on some of these WhatsApp prayer groups, but there is a lot of declaring, you know, we just declare healing and we declare this, we declare that. We're very declarational. We want to have faith. We want to be positive. And then I end up getting given this passage to preach on. And it doesn't feel very positive. It feels like the upside-down kingdom. I don't want to be poorer or hungrier or cry more or be hounded or vilified or harmed for my faith. I don't want that. Can we just skip over that bit and get on to love for enemies and, you know, the nice bits? Can we just, like, cut this bit out of the Bible? Now, that's how I feel. I want to have words with Henry. Why did I end up with this passage when you went off on holiday? But let's delve a little bit deeper. Let's see what Jesus might be saying. So for this, I'm going to need to draw in the help of, let's see, Jimmy and Chris. And do we have any other Greek speakers? Probably. So there are two words that we find in the Gospels that are used to describe blessing or blessed. So the first word is, Chris... Say it again. Evlomimenos, something like that. Yeah, Mia in the first service was like, oh, that's right, Chris. Kind of like, oh, you've just massacred my language. So this word is the more common word that is used in Greek. And what it describes is, for example, when a church leader calls blessing down, you know, ask God to bless others. So it's got a slightly more futuristic feel about it. But then that's not the word that's used here. So it's a common word. If you're an Arab speaker or a Persian speaker or a Hebrew speaker, it's baraka in Hebrew, and that's gone into barakat in Arabic and in Persian and various other languages. So it's that form of God's blessing. But the word we have here, Chris, Jimmy, help me out. Makarios. This word also means blessed, but it's a different kind of blessing. It's a state of feeling blessed now for something that will be to come. So a way of describing it would be, blessed is the happy daughter of Mr. Smith because one day she will inherit the villa. Now, she hasn't inherited the villa yet, but she's blessed now in the knowledge that one day it will be hers. So it's not hers yet, but she also knows she's not going to like work really hard to earn it. It's her inheritance. She's going to be given it. And so that knowledge of what is to come affects how she feels now. That knowledge of what to come is what this word blessing means. So what does that look like? What does it look like to feel blessed whilst you're going through what everyone else would look at and think, that is awful. I'm so glad I'm not you. I think a good example would be Paul and Silas. We can read about them in the book of Acts. This is a millennial version of them. You can see on the screen there. I think it's fairly inaccurate. Just want to make that clear. So in the book of Acts, we read about how at one point Paul and Silas, they go to a town and there's a slave woman who's a slave girl who's got this demonic spirit in her, and Paul ends up casting it out, and it's a spirit that can tell the future. And so her owners, her masters, are really angry, and there's a big kerfuffle, and here's what happens. A mob quickly formed against Paul and Silas. Have you ever been in a mob? Have you ever had a mob coming against you? I have. It's not much fun. and the city officials ordered them stripped. By stripped, I don't mean like take your top off. I mean they were butt naked, and that was part of their humiliation. So it's an act of being humiliated publicly in front of everyone. You know, imagine someone with a bell going shame, shame. Then they were thrown into prison. The jailer was ordered to make sure that they didn't escape. So the jailer put them in the inner dungeon. The inner dungeon is basically a cave or a pit. It is never cleaned out, and there is no bucket. So they would have been in filth, human filth. So the jailer, and butt naked, and I've missed out a huge bit, they were severely beaten as well. So they were beaten with wooden rods, severely beaten. When it came to whipping, the Romans had the 29 lashes. The reason it wasn't 30 was because it was such a severe beating that the 30th lash would probably kill you. So by 29, you were just one step off. So this isn't a lashing, this is a beating. But you get the idea. This isn't like a little sort of naughty, don't do that again. This is like a proper thrashing. They would have been bloody and bruised. So the jailer puts them in the inner dungeon and clamped their feet in the stocks. So they have been beaten really badly for doing nothing. Like there's complete injustice. They've been humiliated publicly. So they've been stripped. They're now surrounded by human filth. So they're dirty and they can't even move because their feet are in stocks. What happens next? Well, around midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. And the other prisoners were listening. See, that is what it means to be blessed. That in the midst of going through all of this, they counted that like worthy. Jesus, you're worth it. How many of us could say that we would do that? How many of us have got friends who've walked away from Jesus, throwing their toys out of the pram because they didn't get, you know, the husband of their dreams, they didn't get the kids, they didn't get the promotion, they didn't get this, didn't get that. We've somehow confused Jesus with Santa and the genie and the tooth fairy kind of rolled into one. You know, he's not there as a wish giver. That's not what Jesus came to do. You know, Jesus said, look, I'm going to suffer and so are you if you follow me. He made it really clear. Like, some of us might need to go back to the terms and conditions that we blithely clicked on when we decided to become a Christian. Actually, he said it was going to be hard. You know, we're in a culture now where hashtag blessed is basically just a way of boasting about our good fortune. It has connotations of smugness, of wealth, of ease. This is so different from the blessed that Jesus talks about, the blessing that Jesus talks about. Paul says, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with you all. He was willing to pour himself out. I used to live in Beirut. I grew up there during the Civil War. And some friends of our family were an American family. In fact, their son, for any of you who like basketball, is now like the most famous basketball commentator in America, Steve Kerr. So it was the Kerr family, and the dad was the dean of the American University of Beirut. And he was a really good man, and he did lots of good. And this was a problem for Hamas, who were sponsored by Iran and for whom all Americans were the great shaitan. And so they assassinated him, they killed him. We've stayed in touch with the family and this guy's wife, she came to visit me when I lived in Uzbekistan. And she talked about, you know, how she remained in contact and remained involved in the Middle East. And at one point, she was involved in a research project that they had in the Palestinian territories to find out what makes people suicide bombers. Obviously, you can't interview you know, a successful suicide bomber because they're dead. But they would interview families of successful suicide bombers, and also they interviewed unsuccessful suicide bombers. So people who were wearing the vest, who pressed the button and then it just malfunctioned. So people who were willing to go to their deaths. It was interesting what they found. They found that actually these people were not fanatical. A lot of them were not even particularly religious. They were educated. That on the whole, they were considered to be kind and compassionate people in everyday life. And the common thing that they found that had driven these people to become martyrs was a sense of powerlessness in the face of endemic injustice, that they would systematic injustice that they would face every day had led them to that. And the reason why terrorism works is because if you count yourself nothing, if you're willing to do anything, including losing your own life, like, you can have a disproportionate effect in terrifying everyone else and in getting your point across. You know, this is not like a jihadi school. I'm not trying to like promote terrorism here, but I am explaining why it works. There's something that when we're willing to pour ourselves out, when we're willing to give up our lives, it makes us incredibly formidable. I wanted to do an experiment, but decided it might get too wet. So what I was thinking of doing is having two people and give them both water. So one of them I was going to have with a jug of water and a cup, and I was going to have them walk around, getting nudged and you know, tripped up by people, because that's what happens in life, but pouring at the same time. The other person, I thought, would have a nice big cup full to the brim. And they also had to walk around, maybe do a whole lap of the church without spilling anything. And I wonder who would actually end up spilling more water. You know, I think it's harder to try and contain and protect all of your water and make sure it's all okay and nothing spills. That's much harder than when you're willing to just pour yourself out. There's something in the action of pouring that is actually easier. And here's the thing. We live in a culture that values popularity and happiness and an image and being fulfilled, if not full. And it is a curse. So you may have seen this meme before. These are the things that Instagram actually makes many people feel. We're living in a society where mental health is going through the roof. Because it's exhausting. It's exhausting to live in a world where you're expected all the time to be happy and full and popular and wealthy. And we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people's lives who maybe created their public image a bit better than we have, and not realizing that actually they have rubbish days, that they have times when they don't look fabulous, that there are times when, you know, they just want to be able to eat bread. I mean, my sister lived in LA for many years, in West Hollywood. On the school run, she would recognize some of the mums from telly. One of her friends, she called her the Beverly Hills mum, you know, would often say to her, "This is as surprised as I can get, because that's what Botox does to you," you know. And she's, you know, she kind of knew where she was coming from. She was like, I work in the fashion industry. I have to be stick thin and I have to have no wrinkles. You know, that's just the way it is. And one time she just appraised my sister, who, by the way, is very slim, and just said, "You know, the problem with you English women, you still eat bread." And I think my sister was like, "Don't you just miss having some bread sometimes, you know?" But we live in this world that is constantly expecting us to be like uber happy all the time, and it is not real. I wonder how 2019 was for you. For me, it was a pretty rubbish year, and I was really glad to see the back of it. I've gone through some real challenges, and I wish I hadn't. However, I have learned from them, and I have grown from them. Because failure can teach us lessons that success can't. And actually, you don't know how someone's faith is until that faith is in the fire. I remember being with Emily Moody and with her parents and with Sam and his family, all just shocked as we were sort of shunted into this room in the hospital. And the doctor said, "We're turning off the machine. You need to prepare yourselves to say goodbye." And I remember hearing Emily praying, and I knew that she followed Jesus. But man, did I know she followed Jesus then. She prayed, God, I'm giving you my husband of 3 months. Like, I'm trusting you with him because I know that you're good and I know that you've got a good future for him, but it's really hard. She was blessed. That is what blessing is. Blessing is it's a reality. It's not just this thing that makes us, you know, healthy and wealthy and all of that rubbish. That has nothing to do with the gospel of Jesus. And I would love to do a Florence Jenkins. I would love to live in a world that is just cocooned and nice and everyone tells me what I want to hear. And it's not real. The way that the film finishes, I'm sorry for the spoiler, she sees a bad review and she doesn't know what to do with it. And basically that sends her spiraling. It would be much easier to live in a world where you've got someone who is bribing journalists to write nice reports about you, but it's not real. It'd be easier to live in a world where everyone claps and applauds and sniggers quietly behind their hands, but it's not real. Jesus calls us into reality to know that life might be hard, to know that there will be bumps, that there will be bruises. He doesn't promise you a blessed 2020, but he does promise you a blessed 2020 because he will be in 2020 with you. He calls us to know him. He calls us to lift our eyes heavenward. He calls us to be a Paul and a Silas, that when we're in possibly the worst sort of situation you could be in, to be worshiping and praising. So whatever you go through this year, whether it's good or bad, it will pass. I find this quite a helpful thing to remember. This too shall pass. It might pass like a kidney stone, but it will pass. So whatever you're going to go through, it will pass. Whatever you might be going through right now, it will pass. And that includes whether you're really happy and content. Like, that's not going to last. Let me just tell you that right now. We have the latest fad from the wellness crowd, you know, from the Gwyneth Paltrow's and stuff, is dopamine fasting. So it's where you just remove yourself from screens, where you remove yourself from all the things that we usually use to give us that little high, whether that be sugar, caffeine, a like on social media, whatever it might be. Because we're in this overstimulated world where we're trying to maintain a constant state of dopamine high, of euphoria. And Jesus says, no. He says, that isn't real. Like, real life has highs and it has lows. And blessed will you be when you go through these lows, if you go through them knowing that I am with you, and if you go through them knowing that this is not the end. So I don't know what we're going to face this year, but I do know that you will face it better if you face it with Jesus. If Jesus is where you get your identity from, if your self-worth is found in him, if during those tough, difficult times, when you are hungry, when you are weeping, when you are feeling alone, when you're mocked by others, that you go through that with him, that you cry out to him and with him, leaning on him. So I wonder if, as a church, we can make a New Year's resolution for this new year, for this new decade. How about we put our hands in his and let him lead us? I'm going to pray. Jesus, I would love it if you just gave us nice words, easy words to preach on, things that make us feel happy, and you don't. You give us difficult truths. But would you help us to take them? And as we head into an uncertain world with so many political and environmental and military questions, with so many different things going on in our own personal lives that are good or that are really hard, do you help us to face them with you? In Jesus' name, amen.